Welcome. This is the combined meeting of the PPSC, which is the Policy Process Steering Committee. And I apologize, there's a lot of acronyms that use in this group. And I think there is a glossary that's around that may describe these particular acronyms. This is an open meeting, so anyone's welcome to attend. And if anyone else wants to join the tables as opposed to sitting in the back, we welcome that as well. What I think I'll do is I'll start out with a brief introduction. The PPSC is, for those of you that are not familiar with it, it's the steering committee that was that got together to discuss basically two main topics. That's the policy development process, which for those of you that were here at lunchtime yesterday, Margie went into a little bit of discussion of consensus policies and the policy process. And also to talk about the use of working groups and essentially kind of rules that should be in place for the new restructuring, or the GNSO as it's restructured. And so what we're going to do during this first hour is really talk about the progress that each side has made, some of the difficulties or stumbling blocks that we've run into. I guess we have the phone lines open, which is good. So we'll talk about some of the stumbling blocks, talking about some milestones and how we can actually get to a point where if everything is as planned, the plan is to have the new council restructured by Seoul, which is only a few months from now. It sounds kind of far away, but you know, there's a lot of work to be done between now and then. So I think what I'll start is I'll start with just an introduction of who everyone is, if they can all introduce themselves around the table and around the back. And I'll apologize to the people that are in the back on the right side here because I can't really see everybody. So if anyone raises their hand, I won't be able necessarily to see you. So it's probably best if you have anything to say. And I do encourage that to come up to the mic, and that way I can actually see you and we can call on you. So I think I will start with, for those of you that don't know me, my name is Jeff Newman. I'm with Newstar, one of the registries. We're the registry for .biz. And I think what I'll do is I'm the chair of the PPSC as well as chair of one of the work teams, the policy development process work team. So I'm going to start with Mike Pelage over there. If you could just introduce yourself, your affiliation, and which of the work team, if you're on one of the work teams, if you could just say that as well.
Mike Pelage from the Registry and Business Constituency, and I'm on none of the work teams, to my knowledge.
I'm Marilyn Cade. I'm a member of the business constituency.
Jim Baskin from Verizon, business constituency, just not a member of any of the groups here.
Mike Rodenbaugh, GNSO counselor from the business constituency. I am on the PPSC, and I'm on the PDP work team.
I'm Ute Decker. I'm a GNSO Council member from the Intellectual Property Constituency, and I'm listening in.
Olga Cavalli, I am a GNSO Council member and non-comma appointee.
Greg Ruth, ISBCP Councillor, Working Group Work Team.
Margie Milam, ICANN staff.
Marika Konings, ICANN staff and supporting the PDP Work Team.
I am J. Scott Evans from the IPC, and I am the chair of the Working Team Work Group. Work Team.
Okay, Ron?
Ron Andruff, business constituency member, alternate member of the Operating Steering Committee, and a member of the a member of the working team for GNSO operations.
James Bladel, registrar constituency and member of the PDP working team.
Terry Davis, GNSO counselor, non-com appointee, just listening in.
DavidMacher.org, chair of the registry's constituency and a member of the working team.
Greg Chinoweth, Dynamic Network Services, a member of the registrar constituency and a member of one of the working teams. I can't remember the acronym.
That's fine. There's a lot of them. If the people on the side want to come up and introduce themselves at the mic, or if there's a, there is a mic going around too.
Hello, this is Alice Yu from GWNIC.
Lloyd Thrower, U.S. government.
I'm Chin Tagalienge, student from La Trobe University.
Илья Базлянков, member of the working group.
Mr. Toran from Connect, China.
Yuji Hosoya from Japan NTT.
Joe Cady, SUG director in France.
Nacho Madotto, CIT, working group, working team, or work team, working group.
Byron Henderson, Travel Registry.
Chris Wright, AU Registry.
Great. I think that's everyone. I don't think anyone walked in since then. Okay, so the way we'll start this is to just go an update of the PDP work team, and I want to thank ICANN staff for helping to do these slides. We'll just give an update as to where the PDP work team is, and then we'll go turn over to Jay Scott to give an update on the working group work team. So this is the objective. The PDP work team is responsible for developing a new policy development process that incorporates a working group approach and makes it more effective and responsive to ICANN's policy development needs. And then the primary tasks, as you see up there, are to appropriate operating principles, rules, and procedures applicable to a new PDP, and implementation and transition plan. So essentially, you know, we're taking into account that a new PDP is in going off the board governance committee's recommendations, is to take into account that the new PDP is better aligned with the contractual requirements of ICANN's consensus policies. We put an emphasis on more work to be done at the pre-launch phase to establish a PDP that's more flexible than the current one that we live under, including things like timing and dates, things like that. Provide for a periodic assessment. So how do we do? Does the policy actually achieve its goals? Is it working? Do we need to go back and revise any of our thinking? Is it better aligned with ICANN's strategic plan and operations plan? And does it contain rules, processes, and procedures that are more effective and efficient from what we have today? And so the way we've approached this is we started out in Mexico City and had a brainstorming session, which really was just a session to just throw out ideas of things that people thought were working, people thought were not working, stuff we should keep, stuff we should just add to the process. And since Mexico City, we've scheduled biweekly conference calls and have had a number of them since that time in the last few months. And I think we've made some pretty good progress, which we'll talk about in a minute. And we've also had input from external experts. And we had one example is we had Thomas Narten from the IETF come in. He's also obviously a board member here. Came in to give a presentation on something that the IETF calls a birds of a feather process, which is essentially a process by which the IETF introduces subjects basically that may result in a working group, may not, but it's to kind of just gather and see what the interest is in that particular subject to see whether it merits further work. And there's although there's not necessarily mandated processes for a birds of a feather, there are best practices or good recommendations that the IETF has put into place that I think are very instructive as to the way we could be doing things, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. So another thing that we had is staff had done an excellent background document on, you know, how do they view the PDP and the work that they've had to do, and staff has had a lot of work in these last few years on new PDPs, doing some background research, getting together all of the materials, and some of the issues that they've come across, things such as, you know, what happens when there's a topic that people want a PDP on, but the issue is so broad. What are ways that can help staff or help others to frame the issues more narrowly so that, you know, when you do get a working group together, it actually can function more efficiently using some of the past examples that we've had over the last few years. And what we've done in the PDP is we've broken down the work into five stages, which are up here. And really, the first stage, which is the planning and initiation phase, is probably the one with the most meat. And we've certainly spent most of the time on that, and in fact are still on that planning and initiation phase. But I think we've gotten to a point now where we can actually move on to the next phase, which is to talk about proposal review and voting thresholds, keeping in mind what that does not mean. The voting thresholds were actually, on a number of areas, already set for us. Coming out of the, and I'm going to forget the acronym, but basically coming out of last July, where there was the compromise reached of certain voting thresholds that will be involved in some way in the PDP process, things of, you know, what does it take, what kind of vote does it take to initiate an issues report, what is the vote that takes if it's, quote, in scope versus out of scope. But there's a lot of things around those voting thresholds that still need to be defined, and those are the things that the work teams need to work through. So even though it says voting thresholds, I don't want to make it sound that we have any input into changing those thresholds, but merely helping to define what they are and what they mean. Then, of course, there's the work phase, which a lot of that is overlap with the working group work team. So I'm actually interested in hearing from some of the members of the working group work team as to where they are with working groups. And, of course, then there's voting and implementation of the policy, if that's what it's intended for. And then the assessment. So once there is a new policy in place, what do we do then? We got to assess its effectiveness and then some mechanism for compliance with that policy if it is something that requires compliance. So stage one, planning and initiation. Again, we're currently in under discussion. And for those of you that are around for the next session after this one, we'll go into much more details about this as to where we are. But essentially, we've broken that down into 11 phases, including, you know, who has the right to initiate a request for an issues report. What does an issues report mean? Scoping out the issues. Creating of that issues report once it's decided that that's something we should be doing, and then how to resource it and prioritize those issues to make sure that there's not too much work going on at once. And we've been working through each of these phases by using concerns and questions. A lot of them were actually raised during the Mexico City brainstorming session, and a lot of them have been known or raised for a number of years, with the objective of getting the work team consensus on a response which will help define what our proposed solution is. And we expect to use a similar approach for the other stages. If you want further information on the PDP work team, there's a wiki that we have that's available for anyone to view. There's a staff PDP background document. There's our planning and initiation working document and a summary of the contributions by Thomas Narten. I will also say that we're trying to arrange for a meeting with Thomas Roessler, who could speak to us about the W3C processes of especially how do they scope out an issue before the policy development type phase. So that's kind of a overall where we are with the PDP work team as from a process standpoint. I'd be happy to take any questions, recognizing that we're really going to dive in depth into this in the next session that starts at 11, is that right?
11:15.
So we'll dive a lot more into the policy development work team. We have a pretty sizable document to go through some of the items that we've been discussing. Plus, we did a survey amongst the work team members on some of the issues that we've been talking about. And I'm happy to say that even though sometimes we have a tough time getting people to show up for calls, there was a good amount of people that actually filled out the survey. So I'm happy about that. So before I go into more about PDP, let me turn it over to Jay Scott to just talk about some of the activities of the working group work team and the sub-teams there.
The working group's work team has divided into two subgroups, and one is trying to come up with a charter guidelines. In other words, it's a document that's going to be used as a guideline for work teams to define their charters and set up their charters for the work team. The other is the operating model subteam, and that is a subteam that is going to look at exactly the processes that a work team working groups will use when they are after they've been chartered. We have finally come up with an outline for the charter guideline, a consensus. It has been posted on the wiki. I think it was posted on June 9th, and we are now going to flush out the text that will flow through that outline, working with our staff liaison and consultant, which is Ken Bauer, who's worked very closely with us to help us craft that so we can put it out for comment to our group and then to the larger group once there's consensus on the actual language of the text that flushes out the outline. With regard to the operating model subteam, we are still working on flushing out that outline and getting some clarifications for how the sections will be devolved and what kind of guidance we want to offer through that. But we are hoping that in our session this afternoon, which I believe is from 1 to 3 this afternoon, I think it's in the same room, from 1 to 3, so if you want to be there, you're more than welcome to come. We're going to flush that out a little bit more. So what we've got now is outlines. We're hoping to use the month, the 6 weeks before the end of July, to get a document out so that the groups have reached consensus that we can bring it to the PPSC, the larger group, then to consider, and then we can move forward.
Okay. Are any of the so you've broken them down into two teams? Are the chairs here now, or?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Is there anyone that's on those teams that wants to give an update as to where they are? Silence. Okay. Well, what have there been any issues as far as, you know, I'll say with the PDP work team, as is a I think kind of an issue with ICANN in general. There's a lot of topics going on at the same time. So I know with the PDP work team, we've had certainly good attendance at some meetings, and at other meetings we've, you know, had to cancel calls because there, you know, three or four people show up, and you know, two or three of those three or four people are ICANN staff, which we've gotten great support from. But, you know, we've had to cancel some meetings because of lack of attendance. So have you guys been having some of those similar issues? Or
I would say we've had exactly that issue. I have found, as a chair, I got involved in the IRT process and was sort of off the radar. And I found that if I am not at the meetings circulating and cajoling everyone to show up, nobody shows up. When I leave it to the subgroups to do things on their own without me coordinating everything, I don't get any, I get some attendance from the stalwarts. But the problem we always have at ICANN is that everyone says, well, we weren't involved or we didn't have an opportunity to comment, but I just don't have people showing up. I have, you know, a core of about three or four people that show up to the charter guideline group and about one or two that show up to the operating model group. So it's been difficult. Now, when we've had the larger calls where both groups are combined, I do get more folks to show up, but then it's really not any work getting done. It's more a discussion about process than actual work. So I've talked to Avery and gotten some pointers on how to push things forward so that we can actually get things accomplished. And I think I've got some ideas for how we can get that done. And one of the ideas is to to actually work with staff to just get us a rough draft of some of the documents out there and then get people to comment on those documents. And we can, you know, if we have something to work with, once the ball is rolling down the hill, I think it'll gain momentum. It's just getting it over the precipice so that it will go down the hill. And so that's where we are now. We've got an outline. The outline does have consensus. So I think flushing out that outline with text, we just need to get a draft out there. And rather than waiting on others to contribute, we're just going to put out a draft and then get everyone to make comment on the draft just so, you know, we'll get something out there. I think once we get a rough draft, it'll get people's minds focused and ready to go and ready to start pulling it together. I think it's the whole point of nobody really wanting to take ownership, and staff has really been very great about assisting, and I'm going to work with them, and we're going to get something out for just to get comment on. And I think once we do that, we'll have far more engagement. Right now, it's a little confusion about what to say and how to say it, so we can use some of the brain power that ICANN staff has, because they're very good at that and being consultants and getting us something as a ground basis level to build from, and that's where we're going to, that's where we're headed.
Yeah, Marilyn.
Jeff, can I make a statement that we could park and maybe come back to? But it's something that you and I just had a very brief conversation about. I am on the PDP working, the PDP group, and one of the experiences that I have, which I suspect is a virus that is has spread to many other people in the community, is this thing called work overload. And I'm wondering if we might, before we leave, look at our experience and think about how we might better structure or might give some advice about how work of this nature can best be done in the future. So, for example, at each meeting that we come to face-to-face, there is a Friday afternoon that is open. And maybe we should be thinking about trying to, when we're doing something as important as this, thinking about how we put together a major period of time together to kick things off, and then go into the work, the support of staff, and the work with committees. Because I, my experience being on the council, when we took that approach in a couple of instances, came together face to face, and we worked in a concerted, straight through period of time to get an initial process launched, I found it easier to then manage the rest of the work. And I, you know, I think everybody's really committed to doing this. They understand how important it is. But I think what we're dealing with is, just kind of workspace overload. And so while we might not be able to restructure what we're doing within this group, this might be a really good lessons learned in terms of our advice about the kinds of support and approach that could be used either to finish this work or in the future on work of this nature, which does have a budget implication, and I realize that. But if we'd started this out by saying to people who are on the group, okay, the Friday afternoon and Saturday after the next ICANN meeting, you're going to be locked in a basement room working on this, people would have planned accordingly. And so just to put that out, not to debate now, but maybe to come back to.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? Gray?
Yeah. I wanted to echo. I thought that we... the calls that I was on, we did have some limited attendance, but I actually thought that we got some very good work done. And I would echo the comment about staff. Ken was really crucial in kind of pushing the ball along. And I think part of the confusion, to my mind, or part of the lack of attendance, was a lack of clear understanding of the roles that each of the sub-teams were focused on. And so I think that clarity of purpose kind of helps with feeling like you have some ownership and know when you get on a call exactly what you're going to do. And I think that the end result of the work that we did will be that future working groups will have that clarity, which is, I think, a positive thing. But I think that the in relationship to the two working groups that I was on, talking about the charter and the operating norms, I think that they're, will result in some very positive things. And with regard to a time to spend, and I think that this is the afternoon session, I think, is intended as exactly what Marilyn was talking about, to spend some time together face to face in a way that really you're able to kind of move the ball forward. And I think that we were really floundering until Ken came in and we got that draft document done. And then I think people have something to look at and chew on, but it really takes someone who's willing to step up with a significant amount of time to build that document. And then people say, okay, well, I can take the half an hour or the 45 minutes to review that and give my comments, but to take the 4 hours or something like that it would take to produce the document, I think is daunting and results in the kind of lack of participation that we saw.
Okay, Ron?
Thank you, Chairman. I'm not sure where this fits into the dialogue of this morning, but I did want to put it on the table, and perhaps we can answer it now or later. As I mentioned, I'm working on the GNSO Operations Steering Committee in the sub-working group, which has to do with the GNSO Operations Work Team. Within that body, we are working on the rules of procedure for the new GNSO. And one of the issues, of course, will be quorum and voting. Voting. Can you just shed some light on how you might perceive voting will take place at the GNSO level and on which type of issues and so forth? Because right now we're a little bit lost in that area. I don't expect this to be a final definitive answer, just to give us some direction about what does voting look like vis-a-vis the PDB process. What will the GNSO council, policy councillors, be voting on as examples, perhaps?
Does anybody want to take a stab at that? I think Tim Ruiz.
If I understand correctly, the voting thresholds have all been defined, correct? So I think they're pretty much set, and I don't believe they're actually, you know, those can be redefined or expected to be redefined at all by the working group. So are there other voting thresholds that are missing or that you're trying to define?
No, Tim. Excuse me. And clear. It was not about voting thresholds, just trying to understand on what issues or where does a vote happen by the GNSO policy councillors in relation to the work that PDP groups are doing and so forth. So just trying to understand, in the past, whenever an issue came up, the councillors would vote and that would ultimately determine the direction of that policy. In this case now, policy is not being determined by the council, the policy councillors anymore. It's being determined by groups, working groups. So the point here I'm trying to understand is, when will council vote on what types of issues? Just so we have an understanding when we're developing the rules of procedure or not. I mean, there may be no changes, but we're just trying to understand where will voting actually come into play. Agreed that the number of votes and how that's determined is clear, but we're just trying to understand when will the council vote and on what types of issues. Is that more clear?
Well, so one of the things that we were talking about in the PDP, and I put this document up, and I know it's real hard to read. I'm using Glenn's computer, so I'm not sure how to increase the size of some of these things. We talked about one of the issues for our group is, and why can't I get to stay there, number five, which is what could be the end result of a PDP. And I'm not sure why it's not staying on a topic, but... kind of, and it's an interesting question that we've talked about, because, you know, when a lot of people think of a policy development process, most people associate that with a policy that comes out of it that is a consensus policy. That's something that puts an obligation on a contracted party, or gives a contracted party rights, or you know, something that affects their contract. But in reality, what we talked about is the way a policy process can be used is for other outcomes. There could be no vote in the end, right? It could be just these are some recommended best practices that we think contracted parties, or we think ICANN staff should be doing. Right? It doesn't have to always be geared at ICANN contracted parties. So the question is, not necessarily the GNSO Council will ever have to vote on anything other than maybe just accepting the report. But Christina's got a comment.
And I, too, have been in IRT land since Mexico City, so I have a lot of list reading to catch up on. But it is my general understanding, Ron, that the council will continue to vote to request an issues report, to initiate the PDP process, but that as with regards to policy, it has been my understanding, and if I'm wrong, I would very much like to be corrected, that once the working group finishes its work and presents its report, that it's really the council's role is going to be limited to saying, did they follow their charter? Did they follow the procedural guidelines? And that if the answer to both of those questions is yes, then depending upon what the output is, whether it's a recommendation for best practices or an actual consensus policy, that it is that thing that the council will be voting on. And as a practical matter, really won't again, as I understand it, if the first two, the answers to those questions are yes, won't really have much discretion.
So it looks like I see a couple people. I see Mike, I see Ron and Bertrand.
Yeah, I think Mike was responding too. Definitely, so. I'm just wondering, Christina, clarify, where do you get that impression? Is that in the draft bylaws? Or, 'cause I don't have that impression at all.
From the conversations that started with the BGC report about the council needs to no longer be making policy but managing it.
Can you explain your position, how you understand it, Mike?
Sure. I mean, obviously, the working groups are tasked with developing the policy, that recommendation for the council to consider, but there's nothing hindering or preventing the council from changing that policy. We are the elected representatives. The working group is not. The working group is volunteers. It could be anybody on a working group. There's no reason why the council should be limited from altering the policy if that's what we decide to do.
All right, let me go. Ron, did you have a... Or did you just have a question? Or
I was just looking for some clarification on Christina, but we've got that now. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to go to Bertrand, and then I'm going to go to... Oh, you didn't have a comment? Oh, okay. I'll go to Marilyn then.
Marilyn Cade, and I'm speaking as an individual. I'm just going to make an observation about the gap. And offer clarity only from my own personal point of view and observation, right? Which may mean it's not clarity. I think there is strong validity in the point that Mike just made about the fact that the councilors are elected and they are thus empowered and entrusted by the constituencies who elect them or the nominating committee who appoints them to exercise certain kinds of responsibilities and judgments. While we are, I think, moving the development, the research, analysis, development of the policy work into a working group, which should be multi-stakeholder, which should be also resourced and supported by ICANN, hopefully starting with a more well-founded analytical perspective going into the work in the working group. The working group will be putting forward a report. And here's the challenge we face. This is a bottom-up organization. If the policy council does not vote, then they are moving the voting to the board. So, and I will say personally, I am on the record as opposing that. And I have spoken at the microphone in the public forums before the board in opposition of that. So I've actually thought that while you're moving much of the policy development work into the working group, it's clear that to me that the policy council must retain its authority and responsibility and accountability. Now, how you do that, I've basically assumed that you must vote. Even if your vote is to accept the work and support the work and endorse the work of the working group. Otherwise, what you're doing is to abdicate your role in a bottom-up organization and anoint the board, which is not something that I think any of the constituencies or the SOs or the advisory groups supported. And I'm not sure that the board would have assumed that they would have been replacing you in that role.
Oh, to be clear, I mean, what I meant is that what the council will vote on is going to be significantly more limited. At least that has been my general understanding. I would be delighted if the reality was closer to what Mike and Marilyn are talking about, because otherwise I don't see the point of being a counselor, but that's a discussion for another time.
Okay, so I'm just developing a queue. I got Tim, Bertrand, I got Philip Shepherd, and then Ron. Is there anybody else?
Just a question on that point, Chair. Seeing as I brought it up, I'm asking just for some clarification for our working group.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. So following what Marilyn just said, then the vote could take place saying we agree with the working group, but it could also say we disagree and kick it back to the working group, correct? If that's how everyone's understanding?
I would say...
But it's still a vote to kick it back, is what I'm getting.
Remember, this is my personal point of view, right? But I would say that, you know, if you think of this as almost like a management structure, right? You have a business unit that has done work, and they send it up the line, and the management team goes, not done yet, do more, circumstances have changed, you need more resources, I'm firing all of you and starting over.
All right, let me try to go back to the queue. Thank you, Ron and Marilyn. Let me go to Tim.
Yeah, that was the point I wanted to make, that it wasn't just the matter of, you know, the working group will do their work, it'll get sent to the council, and then the council is just going to do what it wants with it and change it and modify it or whatever. I think the process would more often be that if we weren't satisfied or we had concerns or questions, that we would kick it back to the working group to work further on it. But I do agree. I think that ultimately the responsibility has to rest with the council. We don't want to kick it up to the board. But I think most of that responsibility needs to be exercised by, you know, continuing to use the working groups or other working groups, whatever's needed to get the work done.
Okay. I have Bertrand next.
Actually, I wanted to say that the two points that Marilyn and Mike were alluding to are two different points. One point is whether the council actually does a vote to validate the process of the working group before sending it to the board, so that the council does have the actual say, which means that the board in the end will probably have a competence that is to accept what the council has done unless there are very specific circumstances. But fundamentally what Marilyn is saying is that it's the council that makes the decision to endorse the working group results and not the board. The other point that Mike was making is a very different issue, because if the council is limiting its role to either endorsing or sending it back with additional recommendation, that's one thing. The second thing is very different, is whether the council receiving a consensus report from the working groups has the capacity to twitch it, to basically say, well, resolution 1 is okay, 32 is not, and 35 is. In that case, it sometimes deconstructs the consensus at the lower level. And it's the same distinction as the distinction you have in a jurisdictional order between the appeals court and the last resort dealing with procedure. In the appeals court, the appeal court can reform the decision and say, basically, you judged wrongly, I judge differently. If you go to the Supreme Court in the American system, the Supreme Court doesn't necessarily rejudge it, or at least maybe I'm wrongly assuming how it works in the U.S. system that I don't know enough. The way it works, for instance, in the court system in France is that the equivalent of the Supreme Court is just allowed to send it back to another court to be rejudged, but not make a decision on the substance. And I think here it is a very important distinction you have to make, whether the council has the capacity to influence the substance or just to work in the process to send it back and be reconsidered. And what I'm surprised at that stage is that this is a question. It is absolutely amazing that at that stage of the process and of the discussion within ICANN, as it's always the case in all issues, when we address issues in ICANN, very deep policy questions emerge very late. I'm sorry, so just a personal contribution, but it's an amazing experience. This is the fundamental question related to the Board Governance Committee recommendation that the Council is less legislative. This is the question number one. The fact that you don't know exactly yet is amazing, but great, because this is a very good question.
I still think that it is a debated item, and I don't think there is a common consensus viewpoint at this point, but that is one of the issues that is later on for the PDP work team to discuss. In I'm trying to get back to this to the PowerPoint. I think it was on this slide up here, stage 4, voting and implementation, right? I think that's an issue that we haven't gotten to yet as a work team, but certainly you hear from the brainstorming session that we had that there's a debate going on. Let me go to first Philip Shepherd and then to Tim.
Thank you very much, Chairman. It is, of course, Sunday, and Sunday is a day typically suited to philosophical discussion. And that, of course, is what we're having. And the reason we're having one is because none of us know how effective the outcome of a work group is going to be. Some of us have experience of certain work groups in the past, and we have our own opinion about the effectiveness of work group consensus building. But that is irrelevant to the future. It may give us a view about the future, but we will see what the future provides for us. So we don't know how effective work group consensus is going to be. Now, maybe it's great and it's clear, and then indeed the role of council naturally becomes one of voting and endorsing outcome from that work group, and it goes forward and everything moves beautifully. But it may be less clear, it may be messy. It may emerge that the work group is split, useless, and making nothing clear in terms of opinion. It comes back to council to make a decision in terms of what do we do next, how do we progress it. And all options must be open in terms of what council then wants to do. Is it sufficiently urgent that council itself must take a decision? Maybe, depends what the issue is. Do we have the luxury of time in order to send it back to the same group? Do we form another one in the naive hope that the outcome will be different? All these things are possible, but all of those things must be within the remit of council and those elected to do so. So ultimately the power must rest with council. And if it doesn't, then the whole concept of electing council, etc., just flies out the window. We may as well scrap that and start again on this whole process of reform. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Philip. Tim, you had a comment as well?
Yeah, just a similar thought. That there is no, single concept or definition of how recommendation, what they're going to look like. It's not, they don't fit into some formula or some template. They're going to vary all over the map. They're going to be quite different depending on what the issue is. And so, as Philip said, we need to have that leeway that in order to be able to act appropriately depending on the type of recommendations or work that we get back from the working group. It's impossible to predict it's going to be exactly this way in every case. So there's no way to say, this is precisely how the council should react in every case. We have to have those that leeway in order to act appropriately depending on what the situation is or the issue is.
Okay. Mike?
Yeah, just continuing on the theme, one big issue that I think certainly the council has to be the ultimate arbiter of is whether a working group recommendation is in scope of ICANN policymaking for consensus policy, for example. Because the council are the ones that are looking at multiple policies and that presumably understand the bylaw provisions and that Margie has now made very clear to us and can make that call. Whereas a working group, which is composed of volunteers, many of whom may never have interacted with ICANN before, ideally, frankly, just would not have the tools or really should not be their place to be making that call. Because it's the council's place in the first place to task them with a charter, and then, of course, to review the recommendations and make sure that they are what the council wants and are implementable.
Okay, any other comments on that? So I actually want to turn back because the discussion is interesting as far as some of the things that we've talked about in the work team. And I think one of the initial questions going back was, what are the potential outcomes of a policy development process? And I'm interested to kind of throw this out since we have so many people here from differing backgrounds and different opinions, is to throw it out to everyone and say, okay, these are the few things that we came up with as possible policy outcomes that would go to the council, putting aside the voting and what they decide to do with it. But the different outcomes we thought of and brainstormed were, this is in a weird place in this document because it's at the bottom of the page and the next page. So I'll read it. Is we thought obviously one of the outcomes could be a best practices or guidelines, which would be non-binding recommendations. And that's, again, that could be non-binding on a contracted party, but it could also be something we talked about as ICANN. You know, ICANN staff. You know, it should be ICANN staff should be doing X, Y, and Z. It doesn't have to be that a registry or a registrar has to do X, Y, and Z. The outcome could be the one that we're mostly familiar with is the consensus policies, which would be binding on the registries or the contracted parties, registries or registrars or possibly both. They could be policy frameworks, such as charting a course for a broad range of activities. That's the parallel there is for new TLDs, right? That was a working group that was not, the outcome was not going to be something that was going to be binding on registries or registrars, or frankly, that was going to be a best practices, but was a general question from the board to set parameters on the introduction of policy issues involved in the introduction of new TLDs. And again, I think you're right as far as there's going to be no, since there are going to be different outcomes, it's hard to generalize in advance as to what the council can or should do. But that said, I think there are a number of people in the room that may still feel that there should be some guidance we should be able to give or parameters in which the council should act in to kind of avoid the top-down decision-making as opposed to the bottom-up. It may be avoiding the substitution of a counselor's policy position. You don't want to substitute necessarily a counselor's policy position for the work that's been done for a working group unless there's some cause to do so. So there's like competing concerns there. Is there anyone in this room, is there any possible outcomes of a policy process that are not up here or that would require different rules? Again, the three ones are the guidelines or best practices, consensus policies, or the policy frameworks, such as a new TLD. Any other outcomes, Bertrand?
There was a possible category of a decision that is outside of the scope of the consensus policies, that is, for instance, not to the scope of a general policy like launching the GTLDs, but that can be something that is, not exclusively regarding registry or registrar agreements or within the picket fence framework. That there are decisions by the council that can be binding and that are not specifically in the framework of the existing arrangement. Am I mistaken?
Well, you triggered something in my mind about things that are going on now. If there's there could be, although I'm not sure this has been done, but there could be a working group established to respond to another supporting organization.
Well, right, for instance,
for what's going on now is, let's say the GAC comes up with a position on the geographic names. Well, in this case, there was a council response, a letter. We could debate that as to whether that was appropriate or not. But in theory, there could be something that's less time sensitive, a subject that comes from the GAC or, where they're asking for thoughts from the GNSO, and it could be a working group set up to respond to that. So I don't think that's kind of covered in one of our three areas. It's basically, providing advice to other supporting organizations or other groups, which wouldn't result in a framework, it wouldn't result in a guideline or a consensus policy. But that's different than what you were saying. You were more.
Well, for instance, if you look at the question of the fast flux or problems related to spam or security issues, is, for instance, the answers or the decisions that will be taken ultimately on the fast flux hosting going to be consensus policies within the framework? Or are there going to be decisions by ultimately the board that will be enforceable? It's a question. It's an open question. I don't know. If they are not, what I mean is that the consensus policy is something that is directly linked to the agreements existing that plan the existence of this framework. There might be other decisions, and maybe I don't have the example, but.
Yeah, yesterday I covered a little bit about that. There's other ways of having enforceable policies against contracted parties, but you got to look at the contract with the specifics. So they're not, they don't necessarily fall within consensus policies, but there are other placeholders in the contract. So it is limited to a certain extent because of the contracts, but it's a little broader than just consensus policies.
Right. Yeah, Marika?
No, and just to add specifically on the fast flux PDP, there, you know, what is currently under discussion are as well recommendations for additional work, maybe with other groups or looking at best practices. So I think we're already currently in the PDPs that are ongoing. We're not only looking at consensus policies or changes to existing policies, but basically trying as well if there are other means to address the issues that that are being dealt with.
And also, I'll take a cue. When we talk about in scope, there's actually two different things, at least in my mind, as far as in scope. There's in scope within the contracts, but there's in scope within the GNSO. And there could easily be a working group where that's established that's not within, that doesn't come out with a recommendation or policy that's within scope of the contracts, but it could still be within scope of the GNSO as a whole. So I think that that term is often used interchangeably, and it's been debated as to what in the current bylaws. The current bylaws now call for a, at the time an issues report is created, it calls for the general counsel to issue a decision on whether something is in scope, but it doesn't differentiate between the two. Now, in my mind, initially, going back years, when I was looking at that provision, I had always thought it was in scope within the contracts. I had never thought of it as in scope within the GNSO. Others did think of it that way. So when we came together, we didn't know that there was a difference in viewpoints, but we all agreed that in scope was something at that time that the general counsel should put a view on. It's just, it's funny because the first time it happened, for me, when I realized it, was in the Feb 06 PDP when we talked about contractual conditions as far as, you know, existing contracts and whether there should be recommendations for changes in existing contracts. And I always took the approach of, well, this is beyond the scope of the contracts, the existing contracts, to actually talk about this, where others said, no, it's not beyond the scope of the, or it may be beyond the scope of the existing contracts, but it's not beyond the scope of the GNSO. And there's never really a bright line test to see that, but I think it's important for us to recognize that that's crucial, and it's something I think we need to provide clarity on if we still keep this in-scope distinction. So let me take a cue. I saw Mike, I saw Tim, Alan. Okay, so let's start with Mike.
Thanks, Jeff. I've not been very engaged in this group, and I'm just trying to get up to speed. So my apologies if this issue has been addressed previously. One of the things I'm looking at with this PDP is how it's going to scale going forward with new entrants into the namespace, and particularly when those entrants are not sort of, if you will, private entities, but perhaps governments or IGOs that may be coming forward. Because right now, the only process for one to get into the zone is through this GTLD process. And if you look back at the 2000 round, there were two IGOs that applied, the WHO and the UPU and the World Health Organization. In the 2004, it again was the UPU. So, you know, looking forward, does this group view a carve-out for governmental or intergovernmental agencies in the current process, or is the current thinking right now, if you're a GTLD, this is it, tough? Or are they going to sort of recognize some carve-out? And again, I'm just trying to reconcile that, because when you look at the namespace historically, there are some things, there are some GTLDs, .mil, .gov, .edu, that have, if you will, fallen outside of the traditional ICANN GTLD policy development process. And again, I'm just trying to reconcile these two issues going forward, and would help to, from those members of the group, to see whether they view a potential carve-out.
Does anybody, before I go on to Tim, does anyone want to respond to that question? I see Alan.
I mean, we certainly haven't discussed that, but my gut feeling is if it's applied for under the new GTLD process, it falls within the scope of the GNSO. Now, that doesn't mean for any given issue it's applicable. So the policy that we came up with on domain tasting on the grace period didn't apply to some domains because they didn't have one at all. So they were excluded from that consensus policy applying to them, but if they had, it would have applied. So I don't think I've heard any discussion within ICANN of the new domains not falling under the GNSO other than the CC.
Okay. Anybody else with a thought on that question? Okay, let me go to Tim.
You know, and we talk a lot about, and it's pretty much the work that we're doing within the PPSC is all focused on, you know, the whole policy development process and the working group up to where the, you know, the GNSO, you know, finally accepts or however we want to frame that, the recommendations from the working group. What I think is somewhat missing and that I have concerns about and not sure how we would address it, but something I think that needs to be considered is what happens to that recommendation after that. Because, you know, looking at the new GTLD process, for example, there is a lot of policy development going on in regards to new GTLDs as this thing is implemented. So just, you know, how far can that go or how far should it go? You know, and what's the process through which that should go in order for that policy to continue to evolve as it's being implemented? And I think, you know, this occurred in other cases in the past, and I realize when you're in implementation phase, you know, you run into things, some things might have to be adjusted or massaged, but I think particularly with the new GTLD process, it really points out how dangerous it could potentially be by allowing this continued evolution of a policy for who knows how long or what period of time. And so, but there's nothing here in this whole new restructuring that really addresses that issue. It's kind of looked at like something perhaps outside of the restructuring. But I don't think it necessarily is because it affects the work that this new structure produces. And so I think it's something that deserves some attention.
So I think, and maybe I'm wrong and others can jump in, I believe we haven't gotten there as the PDP work team yet. Although soon will, is the fourth item there, which is the voting and implementation. I think that doesn't, and maybe it's more in the assessment of policy effectiveness as well. Those two are general categories. We had discussed this within the PDP work team as to the role in, you know, right to date, what it's been is there'd be a policy that comes out, and then they throw it over to staff, and then they go, okay, implement it. And then the staff comes out with an implementation paper, which I agree there, and in a lot of cases, there could be elements that people view in that implementation plan as, wait a minute, this is setting policy. Is that something that should be in the implementation plan? And what is the role of that working group? Should it necessarily be dissolved once something goes up to the council and then goes to the staff to implement or the board to order staff to implement? Maybe the working group shouldn't be dissolved at that point. Maybe it should be continually involved in that implementation, maybe. Maybe not. These are subjects that were kind of, I think, in the between number four and five of those on there. But I do that's an issue that was discussed and needs further discussion. Bertrand?
Yeah, to chime in on this very point, it is a very, very important point, and the new GTLD process is an absolute topical example of this. The moment you decide that something is moving into implementation is a critical moment in the current process in ICANN because it's the moment where basically the ball passes from one side to the other one, namely from the community and the whole development process to the staff. And the ambiguity of this threshold at this moment is putting everybody in a weird situation because, as you said, there are many cases where the implementation document itself is bringing new policy questions, like there is a real choice. In particular, I give a very concrete example when I was looking at the implementation guidebook, I mean the draft applicant guidebook for new GTLDs. The very fact that there is a single fee structure for all types of application is not necessarily mandated by the PDP before, but it is a major policy option. And in a certain way, it is an ambiguous situation where you cannot blame the staff for addressing the issue, but at the same time, you put them in a position of having to make a policy decision, and we don't have the mechanism to review the policy dimensions of the implementation. So I think this notion that there is an implementation policy component is very important, and maybe the transition between drafting of the policy and implementation is more progressive. It should be in stages, like there's the general framework, then identification of three or four items for implementation, then the policy guidance for each of those items, and then you can move progressively into the actual plan. The distinction between the two phases was probably too sharp here, I suppose, seen from the outside.
Anybody else with comments on that? Tim?
Yeah, just real quick. I appreciate Bertrand's comments. I agree there. And I think the key is that maintaining that bottom-up, consensus-based concept and idea when policy issues are addressed during implementation. And I'm not sure we're there yet. Comment periods and things are very much appreciated, but I'm not sure it's the best way to gauge, you know, that there's consensus on a particular issue when it's actually a policy that's being set.
Okay, what we're going to do now is we're going to take a little break because we're going to deep dive in. I missed Alan. I'm sorry. I apologize. Alan.
I actually had comments on that one also, what I was being patient and waiting. With regard to the discussion that's been going on right now, I think it's very important that the council not take a position that we discussed this 3 years ago, we asked everyone for opinions, and therefore it can't be changed. It's cast in concrete. The real world does change around us, and there are times when some of the other people in ICANN are not as engaged in our introspective policy development process as perhaps they should be. And so I think we need to put into it a process by which we can modify these policies after they're passed. And the same, of course, goes for what we're now including in most policies, that is a review period to see if it's really working. On the other hand, we can't afford to start a year process every time a little part of the policy needs to be tweaked. But somehow there should be something in writing to say how we are doing this and not just have it be completely ad hoc as it has been in the GTLD process. The other thing, going back to the previous discussion on outcomes of PDPs, I think we want to be careful that for issues which are within scope of the GNSO, we don't prescribe or forbid types of outputs because we didn't think of them this week when we're writing up the policy. We want the GNSO to be able to fix problems and change policy as necessary. It doesn't have the right to legislate it, but we don't want to stop the GNSO from making recommendations regardless of the exact details of how it's going to be implemented. So I think we need to be careful to leave things open-ended.
Okay. All right, we're going to take a short break. Actually, it's a longer break to 11:15, and then we're going to do a deep dive into the PDP initiation and planning document that we have up here. We talked a little bit about it. Talk a little bit about the results, the survey results we did, and then get into the next phase, the B, which is the I went to the wrong one, didn't I? It would be these slides. There we go. Which is the proposal review and voting thresholds question. So we'll take a break and see everyone back here at 11:15. Thanks.